Welcome to Proudly Resents and ProudlyResents.com. This is Adam Spiegelman with Joe Mortimer at RZO Hot House down in Los Angeles, downtown. Any production can be done here, and the crew is absolutely free because they're all interns in college or right out of college. Yeah. They're volunteers. You make a choice in life.
Any production can be done here at RZO Hot House, not done here in downtown Los Angeles.
No, I've been arrested here for shooting in downtown Los Angeles. So you can either volunteer at a soup kitchen or work on a pilot.
You shot downtown Los Angeles without a permit and got arrested?
Yes. We were out 4 minutes.
Apparently, they're supposed to impound your camera, too.
Well, here's what happened. There was two cameras, two actors. The police came in within 4 seconds. They were there. I mean, there was crime all around. And I yelled out, student production. And they didn't buy that. Then they asked who's in charge, and the guy in charge froze and got mad at me for yelling student production. But he couldn't just say, oh, I go to bullshit college or whatever. They both threatened us and were really mean to us, and at the same time wanted to know what our movie was about.
And could they
be in and talk shop as they do here in L.A.
Right.
So let's get started. We're here to talk about one of the great films, Rock and Roll Nightmare. It's out on special edition from Synapse Films, you know, the famous Synapse Films company. Rock and Roll Nightmare is a great film starring John Thor, a 70s, 80s kind of like the naked cowboy novelty guy. He was on Merv Griffin once.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal clip of him coming out in a Thor costume, Captain America-ish.
Singing some song, and then he gets an album out. Anyway, he does a lot of B-movies, and this is one of them, thankfully. This is from the mid-80s. Everyone in there has hair straight out of Poison. What was his musical inspirations?
Shitty hair band music, horror movies, and boobs.
Those are his three favorite things in life. And I would say out of those three in this movie, a Rock and Roll Nightmare, heavy on the first two, not so much on the third.
Yeah, which was a little bit of a buzzkill because it was certainly not what I was looking for in this movie. You know, just gratuitous sex and boob shots. But I was surprised at how little of it there actually was.
I'll get to it. There is a reason for it. I watched the director's commentary just to be a kid's ass and learn stuff about the film. This movie was made for 50,000.
Do they talk about the sort of really aggressive sex scene that's in there with her sweaty back and all that stuff?
Yes. He actually said, the director compliments himself on that scene.
It was pretty creepy. Cause
if you watch, real quick,
it almost looks like they're actually having sex.
No, she's wearing pants. The guy's a genius, according to him. This movie, it looks like, if you look at the YouTube clips, which you should, it looks like it's some kind of like low budget Conan the Barbarian movie, right?
Yeah.
But it's really about like six or seven people go to a haunted house, and then as you described this morning to me, because we woke up together, they are killed by demons, possessed, and then come back looking exactly the same.
To get tail. They're driven by sex. Like, that's the crazy thing, is that there's a scene where the guy gets taken, supposedly, or whatever really happens to him, killed by a puppet hand. So his death by puppet hand, and he's destroyed, but then he kind of comes back, and then he puts it on his girl. I mean, he really puts it on her.
Well, because now he has a demon in him, and he plays drums better. The drummer becomes a better drummer.
Yeah, Stick, the drummer, is a better drummer. Consequently, in the scene before that, when he was having sex, he didn't even take the Ray-Bans off. Like, the guy has sex with Ray-Bans
in
off.
Fairness, a lot of people don't take the Ray-Bans. Or in that time when he had great sex with her, he didn't take his underwear off. You notice that he just jumped right in. So this scene, there are a lot of bad sex scenes in this movie. Very disappointing. I mean, for a horror movie about a bunch of kids who get killed and possessed by demons, and they have sex scenes. So there's one sex scene you were talking about with the woman's back, and you think they're having sex.
I mean, it was so real for me. I thought that that couple was actually dating in real life. Like, I thought that they were actually
perhaps... I think there was a married couple in that.
But they were perhaps a couple in real life. It was creepy for me to watch how much she was enjoying it.
He brought up that not only she was wearing underwear, and he's done this scene again with a Lou Diamond Phillips movie he directed. He was so proud of the shot that he took the same shot for Lou and Diamond.
This is John Fasano, the director?
The director. Who won to SUNY Purchase, State University of New York, had purchased... As did I, as did Wesley Snipes, as did Hal Hartley, and other great directors.
So what happens? Does John Michael Thor write a screenplay and go, get me John Fasano?
No, they met on some zombie film, which they proudly say that some of the alien or demon costume is from the zombie movie they made. They just spray painted it green. So they meet on this movie. John Thor writes his own horror film where he gets to fight at the end. The last part really is the best part. We'll jump around, but he fights a demon. All of a sudden, he takes off all his clothes. He's wearing a codpiece.
Yeah, which is really creepy. I mean, it's just this studded codpiece, and he's like this,
I would watch 2 hours of that guy walking around.
He's like this blonde Frankenfurter, from Rocky Horror.
Yeah.
And Bret Michaels, drag queen, in a codpiece with a bulky chest.
You're not exaggerating.
Just fighting a fucking puppet.
No, it's a Thunder from Down Under fighting a puppet.
What the crazy thing is like in the puppet, you never see, or the beast, the...
It's like a giant-sized, human-sized
beast. But you never see its...
Like a parade or something.
You never see its fingers. You never see its phalanges.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because they're shaking him from off camera. That's how they're moving his hands to make it.
You don't see below his torso because there's no legs. There's a part where he grabs his feet.
No,
because they only shoot the feet because they only made feet.
It's like a creepy Muppet episode on mushrooms.
Well, it's like the shows we watched when we were little kids, like the H&R Puffin stuff, kind of low budget.
Yeah.
Stuff. So, yeah, and then they have these low-budget demons that
phallic
come out of
finger puppets with one eye.
Yeah, they look phallic in all ways. The movie was made for $50,000. Apparently, the guy who financed the movie was looking for someone to match the $50,000. The filmmaker said, I can do that in free trade. The actors in this movie were paid $100 each. Oh, and you made a comment about how great the crane shots are.
I wouldn't put it on par with the Thin Red Line or anything like that. I mean, sure. But what... I was surprised by the production value for knowing how bad this movie was going to be. Enjoyably bad.
If someone owned a crane, that's the answer to your question. And they got the.
Well, it surprised me. Like right out of the gate, I was like, "Why do they need a crane shot in here?" And then
because they can.
Yeah, I guess. And it was the awful long shot of the van.
Oh, the van shot. Let's talk about the opening van shot. There's a 10-minute. The movie starts with the van going, and you only see one guy driving, and then when they stop, 10 people come out. Right.
Right.
It's because this movie was supposed to be shot for 10 days. One of them, and I think it was the star, had to go to a funeral. So he's like, listen, I got to go to the funeral. So they had to shoot everything in 7 days. So the last day, they just rushed everything. When they edited it, they realized they were 10 minutes short. So the director had to add something.
That's what it felt like, yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah, that's exactly what it felt like. I mean, I get, when you see a van, you're like, oh, shit's going to go down. Right. Somebody's going to get in the van. Somebody's going to get out of the van. It's all bad. All right, we get it. The van equals bad.
Right.
Right? Okay, so
what
we get
it. What was the license plate? Do you remember?
Booker or Docker or
Duck.
Dookie.
Ducker.
Ducker.
That was, and they explained why that is. Because the guy whose van it is... had a ducker on there.
Yeah.
That's why. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, you knew going into it that somebody owned that house that he knew, and somebody owned that van, and somebody probably knew some guy that made monster puppets. Alien monster finger.
Yeah. Or they just used it from another movie or something.
Yeah.
And they keep talking about during the director's commentary, which is actually kind of fun to watch. It's the star years later and the director. And the director keeps saying he wants to redo the film for $10 million. But he wouldn't change much. Keep the same puppets and I would keep the same barn. It's like, why would you want to redo this movie?
Why would he keep the same puppets?
Because part of the appeal of this film, but as a cult film, is that so low budget. And a lot of times you don't hear women screaming when they're being attacked because they didn't have the money to ADR that in later. So there's a lot of great shots.
My favorite things is they say in the beginning when they get out of the van that one guy goes, why did we come to Canada? And the guy goes, because Toronto's where it's happening, man. And he goes, they got film here, they got theater here, they got all these art stuff here, because Toronto's where it's happening.
I think they had to say that to shoot in Toronto. I don't know. They shot in Toronto, obviously, because they're all from New York, and it was obviously cheaper.
Are they from New York?
Yeah.
Yeah?
So he offered everyone $100 and a hotel room.
John Michael Thor is Canadian, right?
I think he is. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So this band, this heavy metal band, goes to this barn for some reason in the middle of Canada, because it's where it's happening.
To rehearse.
To
come up with 10 minutes of new material for the label.
They do one song a day.
However, they brought a bunch of wardrobe, so that when they're rehearsing, it looked like they were actually performing at a concert. Lots of sequins and lots of studded outfits. And
they shoot it like a music video, and it looks really good. And they say, the director's commentary that is like, we should have released that to MTV and... John Thor is like, this could have been a hit. The record company should have been behind it. This could have been great. but they do sound like 80s hair metal. I mean, there's no denying that.
No, they sounded... when I was in Philly, there was a band... growing up in Philly, there was a band called LeCompte.
LeCompte.
Yeah, Michael LeCompte.
You get it for free.
This band from New Jersey, and they played the Philly bars, and they wanted to be bands like Britney Fox and Cinderella and those bands from that area. They really wanted to be, but they were simply a bar band, and this band, the Tritons, struck me as a little bit under that.
Yeah, so it's like a sub-bar band. The band was called the Tritons. Read it into it as you will.
If you lived in kind of a little more remote destination of a place and you went out to a bar off the highway behind the Ramada Inn, this is a bar, the band that you would see.
They're rehearsing for, and they keep saying RCA, because actually Thor had an album on RCA once.
I bet he did.
Yeah, so they keep dropping RCA.
I bet he did. The guy's ripped, though. I give it to him. He looks
phenomenal.
Blown out, man. Yeah. I mean,
he's huge.
He was hitting it. When they go down to the basement to investigate Phil's disappearance.
One guy disappears. He gets attacked by a demon. We don't know what happened.
Right. Thor, they're all standing down there, and he goes, the scream sounded like it came from down here. And she goes, maybe we should go upstairs. And he goes, good idea. And then they just go upstairs for like no reason. They're like, the screen came from down here. Let's go upstairs. Okay, great. So Phil's
the manager. Who, you know he's a manager because he has glasses and a stupid pork pie hat.
Yeah, pork pie hat and an obnoxious shirt and an Archie jacket. Now Phil, he goes downstairs and then somehow the demon transformed itself to an actual girl in the house.
Yeah, we never see her be attacked.
We only hear her get attacked later.
So the demon pretended to be her. She attacks him. And here's the thing about her and the nudity in this film. There's a scene of four women who drive up. You remember at night, now a lot of people are possessed by this point, and four women drive up.
The roadies.
It's supposed to be roadies, whatever. According to this director's commentary, they were supposed to be naked. They were supposed to be topless. And they promised the distribution company that it would be like four sets of boobs in a film. And they get there and they say, oh, no, the line producer said we don't have to be topless, but we had to be topless for the audition. And they tell some sketchy story, but the line producer, which you can rent the DVD to hear, I don't need to repeat it.
So the line producer got his, but he was like, F those guys when they get to Ontario.
So now they still have to serve up four pairs of breasts. So the women who are actresses who are playing the wife and the girlfriend and the keyboardist or whatever, they all have to now show their breasts to be troopers. So that's why they'll take off the top and then quickly hold their breasts. Or they'll turn to
the side. Yeah, because in that steamy sex scene, she's really cupping her arms over her breasts as not to expose herself.
Either do it or don't do it. You're in or you're out.
Whatever. I mean, it's not like somebody sitting in the audience going like, oh my God, that's a tit I've never seen before. Look at the shape of that thing. That's the Hope Diamond of tits. Look at that. It's like a big teardrop snowball within a large pancake areola. Nobody's getting that specific about...
It's a funny thing that all of a sudden like a demon attacks... Take off the clothes and then go.
The strange thing about the demon attacking is that nobody ever runs from this. They just freeze with fright and scream and then get killed.
But they never really show them getting killed. They have.
They
like
do it in silhouette. You know,
one time, we've talked about another film before where they do the silhouette move. Oh, don't worry about silhouette. We can do it. No one will notice.
I was really kind of shocked. It doesn't surprise me that John Fasano went on to direct kind of bigger pictures. Certainly, you had no faults with that part of the movie. Obviously, the subject matter and the alien monster, demon monsters, I mean, that was all laughable. And, you know, some of the dialogue is just... And he, in particular, has the most... Of the bad dialogue, yeah.
Yes, has... His share of the worst dialogue, and he's kind of the hero.
Well, in fairness to him, you know, he took the bullet, he wrote it, so he thought he had the best dialogue in the movie. There was a scene of them where they were in like the piano bed.
There was a bed with piano keys for some reason, which, by the way, was there when they rented the house.
Of course, so they're like, there's a piano bed upstairs. And they show him reading something which looked like probably a copy of the script.
Nobody had
a book or a newspaper on set. So they're like, here's the script, read the script. There's just that shot. But then again, I mean, you know, at the end when he's writing music and then he gets called out by the demon and he's going to be killed and then he explains how he set him up. I thought it was going to be revealed that he was the child who grew up in the house and like this was his ultimate revenge. And it wasn't. And then there was that other weird clip of the kid who I thought was the kid still from the house from the beginning who was just another kid who strangely looked like the other kid from the beginning of the movie. And then Carl, who... owned the house or worked at the house, the farm, who I thought he was going to have something to do with. We never saw that guy again.
He just came out once. It was like a Scooby-Doo episode.
It really was. The van, in theory, was the mystery machine.
And the outfits were pretty bright colored.
Yeah. Yeah, the outfits were great.
So let's talk about the fight scene at the end. He fights the devil. All of a sudden, he takes off his glam rock clothing and looks like Conan. He's got the great muscles, crazy hair.
He looked like Conan the gay porn star is what he looked like. Like it looked like
the gay barbarian.
Yeah, Conan the gay barbarian. He really did. But that's what made this movie great, I thought. Is that you just go, come on, dude.
So they throw the
and
demon.
You know that guy fucking owned that codpiece. Like you know he just brought it with him.
Well, he might as well use it. He probably still has it.
He broke it out of his footlocker.
He gets attacked by the demon by these squids the starfish that he throws at him, but they don't stick to his body, but they're supposed to. So they throw it at him, and he holds it against his chest, and he goes, ah! It tries to pull it off. And what they said was apparently the suckers on the bottom, they're actual Cheerios.
Oh, is that what they were?
They put Cheerios on it, look like suckers. Speaking of suckers, you and I sat through Rock and Roll Nightmare. Do you recommend it real
I
quick?
I would totally recommend it. I mean, I would absolutely recommend it. I think this would be a great, invite a lot of people over, make a night of it, watch it, make fun of it, enjoy it.
Enjoy it. It's fun.
I don't want to leave without saying this. This is John Michael Thor, who, by the way, is no Jan Michael Vincent. John Michael Thor, this is his Purple Rain.
Yeah, I'm sorry we didn't leave it with that. You're absolutely right.
Because he just sandwiched a bunch of bullshit in between music videos, which is essentially what Purple Rain is.
Don't you ever put down Purple Rain.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time. You. Also one of my favorite albums of all time. But when you really watch, I watched it recently, and again I go, this is just seven music videos with him sort of being mad at his father and trying to bang Apollonia and Morris Day.
I don't think you understand the movie. Yeah. I don't think you can.
I think you're missing the point.
I think you're missing the point.
He's trying to get out of...
His dad hit his mother. He doesn't know why doves cry.
Minneapolis, yeah.
Oh.
And he's driving like a 180YZ, you know, like a 200cc motorcycle.
Well, yes.
Prince has a mini... That's a mini bike he's riding in that movie.
He makes it look badass.
He does make it look badass.
We're going to go out with one of the songs from the album.
Is this Energy?
This is Energy. This is from the movie. This should have been a hit in the 80s, according to singer John Michael Thor. Here we go. Enjoy it.
Energy. Yeah. Takes me where I
Thanks for listening to Proudly Resents, ProudlyResents.com. Please, if you enjoyed the show today, put it on your Facebook, put it on your Twitter, the StumbleUpons and the Digs and the Dags, whatever your kids are into. Hook a brother up, let people know. Show is free,
Not going to ask you for money. But let people know about the show. You can reach me Twitter, @ReachAdam, and my email is reachadam@mac.com. Listen to other bad movie podcasts like Bad Movie Night. All right, that's it.